Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Rachel, exclusively on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to the show. Today is Wednesday, September 6th.
Good morning.
And we're back.
We are.
No guests.
Hi, Sam.
Hi, Rachel. Well, I kind of like take it for granted that you're here, you know, that I don't need to greet you every morning since I already did. But okay, hi Rachel.
I'm still coming off the high from yesterday's show. Was awesome.
Yeah,
can we
right?
please have Bridget back?
Yeah, I told her to come back.
She would be. I know you have your like other like backup hosts. You know the right. understudies of me, right? But she would be like, she's Rachel approved.
Yeah, I'm definitely gonna invite her when you take some time off and stuff. Yeah, she's very cool. If you guys didn't listen yesterday. We had a show with Rachel's friend, Bridget
Fetisi, who's an amazing comedian, a fantastic writer, and just an overall badass chick.
Yeah, very interesting woman, too. So, and yeah, there's a lot we didn't even cover.
I know. Can we please? We'll have to invite her back because I'm so curious. She's so fascinating. And, you know, she makes me realize I am liberal, obviously, by nature, in contrast to you guys, right? But a lot of what she says to me is just so smart and intelligent and just so well thought out, you know? And, I mean, yeah, I've disagreed with some things that she says, but, like, that's what life's about, right? You got to disagree, and that's how we grow and move forward. But, yeah, I'm just such a fan of hers. And it's also, like, I think I've briefly talked a little bit about this. In the comedy community, it's hard to find women that are just genuinely, you know, it's not hard to find women, but there is a competitiveness, which I don't understand because, for me, comedy, like, men, there's so many men, male comics, and women, we all really have a shot. So it's like, I think that, but, you know, women, it comes with emotions and insecurities and things and whatever. So it's just cool to find cool chicks and comedy that I can network
and especially in LA, you know, where there's no good reputation for people,
right?
There's a lot of great people.
It's
in
so
this town.
Hard to find. Well, there are, you know, but you have to like you have to kiss a lot of frogs, you know.
Really,
you got
to
hang out with those toads and get burned by, you know, the fucking sea creatures of LA that want to just suck the life out of you. But no, it's cool. I'm grateful for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool. But we are going to have a phone guest calling in a few minutes. This is going to be cool. And all we'll just tease is the name of his book called Hung Like a Seahorse. And so you
sounds like a book you would have behind your toilet that you would read, Sam. I feel like I feel like I walk into your house and I'm like, hey Sam, can I use your bathroom? And then like behind the toilet is Hung Like a Seahorse.
Oh my god.
And what is your poo telling you? Like those are the two books I would see. I'm like, Sam, really?
Really?
Is that and maybe like a Playboy, like wedged
oh
in
my
there.
God, you totally I'm don't like, know my reading habits.
I'm just kidding. I'm like, maybe it's your, maybe more like your son's room, you know what I mean?
Yeah, maybe, I don't know. But it sounds funny, and I'm sure the guest is going to be very entertaining, so we'll wait for his call. I read a lot, you know, I'm reading a lot of books now. And
do you read the books or do you download them on your iPad?
No, I get the books.
Yeah,
I
you like holding the book.
Yeah, I really do. You know, and I've tried Kindle for a while, and it doesn't work.
I don't think
for
it's
me.
Good for your eyes too, to stare at like a screen like that. You know,
right? And they do say that reading on paper, you retain more.
Yeah,
than on
that
a
makes
screen.
Sense.
Yeah, but really, I mean, the act of holding the book, smelling it—I mean, I just love holding the book.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny, but people
there's
that like
be
to
a day
read are
gonna
like
stop
that.
Printing books.
I know. There's always, you know, what it's going to be like. It's going to be like a niche market, like vinyl is
exactly.
now.
Exactly.
You know?
Like bookstores are going to be like the, you know, what Blockbusters were, right?
Yeah.
Or, you know, but those. Those are gone too.
Yeah, so. I mean, there's not hardly any bookstores left.
There's actually in LA, there's a fair amount of like really good. You can find them. There's some gems around here.
Yeah, those independent.
We're such a. I feel like we appreciate things like that in LA and New York. Maybe not in so much other places, but like it's so hard. Like remember when I was growing up, Barnes and Noble was like the hottest thing, you know, Barnes and Noble. And what was the other one?
Borders.
Borders.
Right.
Right? Yeah. Like bookstores, giant bookstore. I mean,
I know.
Bigger than clothing stores.
I know.
Who thought that was a good idea? You know?
Well, I loved them. They were busy. Right. And Barnes and Noble is still, now they're the only game in town, so everybody goes.
But I mean, that was the thing. You would go and hang out at this bookstore.
I know. I would take my kids. They would have readings for kids.
You know, that what they should have done is, you know how they combine like Taco Bell and KFC? Is they should combine like two markets, like movies and books or something. Yeah, so
that's
that,
a good idea.
You know, while you're waiting for your movie, you go and get a book. Or it just seems like, why so much space for, you know what I mean? Right. It seems like a lot of rent money to go to for books that, you know, people could just not leave the house to buy, right?
That's true, yeah.
So,
but and plus the prices, you know. So when I go to Barnes & Noble, I try to buy a book or two occasionally so to keep them open, you know. So you got to buy something. But when a book is $30 and Amazon gives it to you for $15, you can't justify it.
It's not
justified at all, you know.
That's just the world, how the world. I went into, it's so funny, I went into Whole Foods. I made a joke the other day. I was like, Whole Foods is so cheap now, my ex can afford it. You know what I mean? Like, damn. Like, I went in, I got a salad, and normally, you know, when you go to the salad bar, it would cost me over $20. I'm like, Yeah, because I put so much, you know, because it gives you all the salads. I don't want to just eat, you know, and then I get hard-boiled eggs. I get shit that weighs.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And I get up to the counter and I'm like, how did I just spend $23 on a salad at Whole Foods? And now I went there last week and I'm like, it's much cheaper. Like I walked at that salad was now like $10. It's half the price. And I'm like, fuck. This is awesome.
I know. You see,
In the past, I would go there, I get four things, and that's $100. Right. How is that possible?
Yeah. I don't know. I think that Amazon is buying our souls through cheap prices, you know, because, I mean, that's how we're giving them this dominance by going to these places.
I get what you were saying, though, last week, how frustrating, because then it means that you literally going to one place to get all of your things, which puts opportunity out of the hands of, like, small business owners and just other...
And then they can play with the prices, too,
because they don't have competition. Exactly. So I get what you're saying with that, and I don't agree with Amazon. You know, I feel like when things are cheap. Who doesn't like that? But as long as, like, you know, I mean, there's still going to be farmers markets. There's still going to be other places to
get,
you know, but I mean,
malls are disappearing, you know, big discount, not discount stores, but Macy's and,
but the thing is like, maybe we need to not have, maybe not everything it needs to be so excess, right? It's not, we don't need giant stores, you know, it's like, we got to change with the times, and I hope that doesn't mean that small business owners, you know, are going to get shafted, or at least other companies or whatever. But we'll see. It'll be interesting to see.
No
one likes a monopoly except the guy at the top.
Right, exactly. That's what I mean, you know. But Amazon sure penetrated the market.
But you know what's crazy is with, like, 3D printers, I mean, we're going to be able to make a lot of this stuff at home.
Right.
You know, like, that we won't even need to buy. So, I mean.
No, that's true. I mean, the world is changing. We got to embrace this change and figure out, you know.
I think it's weird because it seems as if within the last couple years, and I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, you've been alive longer than I have, that things are happening a lot faster in the last few years than ever before.
Yeah, the
is
world.
Is that, see, like, change, just so much change, like, even with the weather, the politics, the.
No, you're absolutely
you know, like,
right.
More so than, like, ever before. And is it because of the media, or is it because things are really just changing so fast?
I think it's technology. I really do. It gives us so much to do and so much information and stuff.
Right, because think about it. This is the first, you know, wave of this phenomenon or this tech, you know, so we're really...
Yeah, it's never happened before, right? That's what you're saying,
because, like, growing up, I mean, things were just so much slower, it seemed. Life was just... slow.
I know. Now the world is operating 24/7. You know, there's always,
I mean, you need to get
open.
Somewhere, you click on an app and the car comes for it. You know, like, things are instant, right?
Right.
Whereas in the back of the day, I mean, you had to memorize phone numbers. You had to, if you told someone you were going to be somewhere, you had to be there. There was no canceling, you know, and you had to wait.
Yeah.
You know?
It was a different world then, but, you know, I mean, like I said, we've got to embrace this change, because if we try to fight it, man, we lose, you know, because you're going to be left behind. So you just got to catch up with it. And, you know, it's not easy. I mean, especially for older people that have been around for a long time and they see the world changing so fast, like you said, you know, and so dramatically so. Mm-hmm. So
I, just a note, you know, I lived in Florida for 4 years, Boca Raton.
Right.
Yeah. When I was there, I didn't witness one hurricane. Like, I maybe went through one mini hurricane. That was nothing.
Right.
But they're about to go through the biggest hurricane that Atlantic has ever recorded in history. Right. 800 miles wide.
Wow.
Isn't that insane?
Yeah, that's Hurricane Irma, right?
And then right behind it is Jose. So there's just...
Right.
It's just, and, wow, you know. So.
And they're saying this is going to destroy like a lot in Puerto Rico. Mm-hmm. They may not have power for months. Can you believe that?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I feel bad for all the people who thought they were going to get married in the next couple weekends.
Yeah, right. Or people that were going on cruises, the cruises
canceled.
Forget
cruises. Think about cruise. You can always book another cruise.
Right.
People plan weddings around this time of year in these places because it's nice, you know?
Yeah, yeah. 185 mile winds, mm-hmm, mile per hour winds.
Yeah,
it's category 5. I thought it only goes up to 4. Wow.
Yeah,
category 5.
It's gonna be scary. I have a lot of friends down there, a lot of people I care about.
Really?
Yeah.
They're saying Florida is already out of water.
Yeah, out of water, gas, everything. It's,
yeah, the stores are out of bottled water.
It's gonna be bad.
Wow.
I just hope everything, you know, I just hope they're safe.
I know. It's heading right for Florida, man.
I can't believe I mean, even I lived there for 4.5 years and
never experienced a hurricane.
No, I mean, we had like a mini one come, but it was like, hey, we're going to have a hurricane party. We can still drive in it. I mean, I lived right on the coast. I was on the beach.
Right.
So, I mean, it was, it was crazy, and now it's just, you know. I mean, that's why I don't think, you know, I definitely think that humans play an effect on the climate and the environment, and, you know, with the toxins and, you know, all the emissions that go into the air and stuff. And they're, you know, with HART, which is the company that studies the weather and, like, affects weather. I think that's what they're called, HARP, HAARP, or, yeah, there's look them up.
Okay.
They study weather. They like do things that affect the weather and stuff. I mean, there's just so much that I think humans do contribute to climate change, and like, right, you know, like what they were saying with Texas and the refineries and things, like, it's not healthy for the environment.
Right. It can't possibly not hurt the environment.
Right. And also, it's just like, we see how much stronger these things get and keep happening.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I just think that we need to take better care of our Earth.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I don't think anybody argues with that.
I don't think
that,
it needs to be even a political discussion. Not you. I mean, just like,
right,
the fact that we have people in this country,
right,
at the top who aren't acknowledging,
right,
what,
right,
we're doing.
Still denying this. Yeah, it's unbelievable.
And shutting down the, yeah, parts of government that care about this. And I mean, there's Republicans coming up and being like, we need to do, you know, so it's not, it's just there's just bad people, you know?
Yeah. There's bad people. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. So Hillary is coming out with a memoir. It just came out, actually. I don't know. But apparently she says that, well, an analyst says she's right about why she lost. And we'll see. So I'm looking forward to that because we haven't heard much from her.
I know. You know, I think I want to hope, you know, like, I know I'm very anti-Trump, whatever, but I do think I hope that good things will come from this. I think good things are coming from this, despite what he is, you know, because we have people organizing. We have people, you know, I was telling Bridget yesterday, like, I know senator stats like I know athlete, you know, like,
really?
Have my favorite senators. I, you know, I love Al Franken. I think that it's so cool. He used to work for SNL and he was a comedian and he's now a politician. I mean, it's made us care more. I hope that will translate in the polls. I hope that will sustain, you know,
yeah.
And, but I just, I want to hope that there's good that comes from this chaos, mm-hmm. right? Because I was watching the news yesterday and they were saying, you know, usually the candidate after is so drastically different than the candidate before. Like Obama was so different than Bush, and then right, Trump is so different right, than Obama, and then exactly. we'll probably have someone so hopefully so different than Trump.
It swings back and forth, you know, yeah. Here, our guest is calling now, so we're going to go right to the phones, and if we can get the phone to work, and we're going to be joined by Quinn. Quinn, are you with us?
Yes, I'm right here.
Yeah, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, Sam.
Of course. Quinn Alexander Fontaine, quite a mouthful, but we heard you're a very cool guy, so we want to have you on the show.
I'm glad you heard something good.
Yeah. Well, you know, where are you calling us from this morning?
I'm in Santa Fe, New Mexico.
Oh, wow. What's the weather like there? Is that pretty, very hot like here?
We aren't having the heat wave you guys are. I'm sending my love to you guys with all the fire and everything. It's pretty intense. No, we're mid-80s right now.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's where we are. So it's cool weather. You actually are not beaten by all that weather going around the country, man. It's unbelievable.
I know.
Yeah.
Major. Yeah.
So have you always lived in New Mexico, or did you move there from somewhere else?
Yeah, no, I actually lived in L.A. for 10 years.
Oh.
And I came to Santa Fe 12 years ago to go to treatment. Oh. I had a serious problem with pre-verbal childhood sexual abuse and a lot of trauma, and then a lot of drug and alcohol habits. I'm in recovery from crack cocaine, pills, pot, alcohol, sex and love addiction, shopping. You name it, I had an issue with it. So I'm in recovery from multiple addictions, all stemming from, you know, pre-verbal childhood sexual abuse.
Wow.
And I talk about all of that and more in my book.
Yes, Hung Like a Seahorse.
I want you to say the title.
Hung Like a Seahorse. We already, yeah, that's a good title, man. That's an awesome title.
Hung like a Seahorse. Yeah.
Yes.
Hey, it's catchy, right? It's catchy and it's true.
It is. Well, tell us why you decided to name it this title.
Well, I was sitting down to actually to write my third solo show. I've done two solo shows pre-transition. September 17th will be my three-year maniversary. You heard me right, maniversary. That means 3 years on testosterone. I sat down about a year and a half ago to write my third solo show, and I knew the title would be Hung Like a Seahorse, but nothing was coming. You talk about writer's block. It was writer's block on steroids. Nothing was flowing. And I had stored in the back of my mind a dear friend of mine I met at Agape out there in L.A., Agape International Spiritual Center, with Michael Bernard Beckwith. Years ago, I met a guy named Keith Leon, and he went forward in life and started a book company called You Speak It Publishing. And I stored that in the back of my head, and I was like, you know what? Nothing's flowing. Maybe if I call Keith, he can help, you know, pull this story out of me. And sure enough, he did, and his whole team did. They helped me out. There were a lot of times I wanted to abandon this project. It was too much of too many things. It was triggering. I thought, why me? Why me? Who am I thinking I can tell this story? And they were so loving and gentle and kind, and they said, Quinn, now is the time. Now is the time for this message, and you're the perfect conduit because you bring forward so much. You're a truth teller, and you bring forward the truth, but you also bring a lot of heart and humor.
Right.
I mean, from early on, humor was, you know, I found humor early on. I became the class clown. And I realized not only is it a defense mechanism on some level to keep me safe, if everyone thinks I'm funny, then I'm safe, right? The court jester, right. no one's mad at the court jester.
Gotcha, gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense, you know. So you grew up and early on you're already being abused by people around you, according to what you're saying. Wow, do you want to tell us a little bit about that? I mean, those are the stories that are hard to take.
It's all in the book as well.
Okay.
I was abused by my father. I was sexually abused by my dad when I was a baby. So pre-verbal childhood sexual abuse. It's way more common than people realize. And it didn't come up for me till I was 37 and I'd gone on a trip with my dad and it stirred up cellular memory. And I ended up flying back to LA from a trip I'd taken with my dad on a cruise to the Bermuda Triangle.
Oh, wow.
Of all places. It just seems made up. It's not made up. The
That's
Bermuda Triangle.
Crazy.
I hadn't been on a trip with my dad in years, and it stirred up cellular memory. I flew back to LA and I got in all kinds of trouble with the law. I scared an ex-girlfriend pretty badly over the phone, and I showed up at her place of employment one day, and they called the cops, and she got a 3-year restraining order on me. And I say all of this, I'm not proud of it, nor am I ashamed of it. I went through periods where, of course, I was ashamed, but I realized, and I hope this is the message I can bestow on other people, is that we are not our life story. We are not our stories. We are not what happens to us. And nor are we what we do in moments of despair and or triggered moments of PTSD and whatnot. I'm incredibly sorry that I did that, and I owe her an amends if and when the time is right. But anyway, I got in trouble with the law and got a 3-year restraining order from her, from the court. And my mom said, you know, you used to go on trips with your dad when you were little, and you'd come home and act out and have to be reprimanded.
Oh, wow.
And that was like the first aha moment. It was like, what do you mean? Well, I'd go on trips with my dad all the way from time I was 2 up until 6, just the two of us. And I would come home and act out and not have a language for what had happened to me. You know, he continued abusing me probably up until about 7. But cellular memory kicked up after this trip, and I was a mess. I was an absolute mess. One friend in particular really helped me, keeping me safe during that time. I reached out to her. This is October of 2004. And I said, listen, I'm as close to crazy as I ever want to get.
Yeah.
I need some help. I need containment. And she helped me. And then another friend gave me 2 names of different therapists right there in L.A. And I called both of the therapists and told them, you know, I don't really remember my childhood before at the age of 11. I've pieced it together through photographs, and that's the truth. I have some really intense triggers around sexuality and being touched in certain ways. But I'd always just chalked it up that, oh, I'm really sensitive or, you know. And so I told them these things. And then I said, I also just went on a trip with my dad and came home and acted out and, you know, got in trouble. And they both, independent of one another, said, it sounds like possible childhood trauma.
Oh,
and
wow.
At that moment, hearing this from both people, I got back in my body. I had been a bit dissociated.
Yeah. Wait, have you confronted your father about this abuse?
Yeah, right away I did. I called both my parents. They had divorced when I was about 18. No, 21, when I was 21. Mm-hmm. So I called them both and I asked them the same questions. I said, did you ever sexually violate me as a child? Mm-hmm. They both said no. I said, because at the time I had no idea who it was.
Right.
You know, at the time it was like, whoever was with me when I was a baby is responsible for whatever happened, because
right.
I, you know,
there's probably blame
run away, walk
to,
away.
To place on both. I mean, you know what I mean? Well, keep going. So what happened?
No. And I was really open. I mean, I knew I needed help, but I also was just like, help me understand the puzzle of my life, which, you know, everything had fallen apart, but finally started to make sense when this happened, you know?
Right.
So I asked them both, you know, hey, did you sexually violate me as a baby? No. Do you have any idea or recollection or feeling or knowing that the other parent did?
Right.
No, they both said no. Do you have any sense that any weird neighbor came around too much? You know, there was no, all the answers were no.
Oh.
So I had to work with just not a lot of memories. I mean, my mom did say at that one point early in my healing, you know, she said, you used to go on trips with your dad, come home and act out and have to be reprimanded. And
right. And
my dad, you know, I wish he could do his healing work this lifetime. I mean, I'm still holding out hope, but he's 75 and I kind of think he won't get real about it. And that's his journey, you know?
Yeah. And I think that's usually the case. You hear about perpetrators and stuff that they won't admit it. They won't come forward. Well, I'm sure it's just about, it's shameful for them too. Maybe when they look back or whatever.
Do you have siblings?
I have one sister who's younger. And the whole thing, just to speak to what you just said, Sam, about, you know, the shame and all of it. It's a cycle. The abuse cycle is a cycle, and it happens in families, and it happens for generations.
Yeah.
And you know what? I can say, I can be big, strong, and proud and say it stops. It ends with me. It ends with me. And I wish, you know, I've spoken in a real way with my dad over the years, saying, you know, if and when you're ready to do your healing work, let's have a real conversation.
Right.
But until then, there's nothing really to talk about.
Right.
Because nothing's based in reality.
That just goes to show you how strong of a person you are to be able to, you know, I don't want to say look past, because by no means this is for, you will be healing from this forever, but really just like that, you, that's your dad, and you know, you still are willing to, I like, love him, and when the time is ready, hopefully he will have a conversation with you about it to give you that closure, you know, or at least.
I don't know that you know, I don't know that that's going to happen. I really let go of the hope I was holding out on. I mean, it's still there. I'd love to be surprised, but most people that don't break the cycle, heal.
Do you know anything about your grandparents, like his parents?
Yeah, there's speculation. I don't want to get into that too much, but there's speculation. I don't have any obvious answers, but based on, you know, my mom would share some weird sexual, just some weird stuff my dad was into or not into.
Right.
She's actually said it's a miracle they even had two kids, because he was asexual.
Right.
You know, that's one route people go, perpetrators and whatnot.
Where are you from? Message is, where were you born and raised?
I grew up. Yeah, I was born in the Philippines, and my dad was in the service, and we moved around quite a bit. We moved 8 times before I was 6 years old. Oh. And when I was 6, they settled in their hometown of Fredericksburg, Virginia.
Right.
Wow. So I did kindergarten through 12th grade there, and then I bolted to go try to find my people. You know, I grew up, I knew I was trans, but there was no word for me. I just knew I was this is my verbiage. I knew I was a boy in the wrong body.
Right.
Never mind in a small town in the 70s and 80s.
Right.
You know, there's barely even the LGBT spectrum.
Exactly.
The people aren't talking about that.
Right.
The word trans didn't come around until the early 90s.
Yeah.
So, and that's the thing, is that obviously, I mean, you're telling us about such a tough childhood, and then on top of all this, you struggled with your own sexuality. Tell us a little bit about this. So all this abuse was going on when you were a girl, right?
Yes.
Okay, and that's what people have to understand, because up to that point, we hadn't said you were transgender, so people could have thought the father was with a boy, but...
have you talked to your sister about, like, obviously you talked to your sister about this, but
yeah, I talked to my sister about this. I need to not talk about her too much. She's upset with me that I've even mentioned her in my book.
Okay.
Oh, wow. Okay. So, we won't.
But she has her own story that she can tell if she wants
to.
You know what I mean?
Right.
My message, it's so complex, you know, like I said, I didn't know I had, pre-verbal childhood sexual abuse at the hands of my dad, you know, of all people. It's like, welcome to the world. It's not safe.
Right.
If one of your caretakers is perpetrating you sexually, and before you can run, walk, or crawl, you can't even do anything. We're based on breath work and other modalities of therapy I've done over the years, we've been able to hone it down. It started probably around between 4 and 6 months of age for me.
Wow.
Yeah, wow.
So that's
amazing.
A big, huge welcome to the world, right?
Yeah, there
and,
you go.
So later, you know, and growing up, knowing I was a boy in the wrong body, and also knowing I always liked girls, been sexually attracted to females.
Really? At what point at what point did you have these feelings? And because I would imagine first you get sexual feelings, and then you sort of like realize, wait a minute, but I'm attracted to the wrong sex or something.
I also knew that was, I didn't feel like it was wrong because it was so real.
No, I didn't mean wrong. Like, well, as far as society,
society. It was just another thing that I had to hide and work with.
Wow.
And like I said, I found comedy early on. It was a safe way to be popular enough and safe enough and within and throughout all the different cliques in school.
Right.
And it was a time, the 70s and 80s, in a small town in Virginia. I mean, nobody's talking about anything real. I mean, the only talk show at the time that was really breaking ground with real topics was Phil Donahue.
Right.
But they still hadn't started talking about transgender stuff.
Right.
And even still to this day, that part of the country is just like, you know what I mean? Like, I just feel
a little
like
bit. They've come a little.
They
way,
have,
but give
yeah,
them
they have. They're starting to come around, but you know, there's still pockets. It's still like kind of like the old, old South. Even though it's like, you know, it's not the South.
And
Virginia.
Right. And it's still tough for you at this point in your life, I'm sure. So you were born into a very challenging life, I would say, quite a journey. And this is inspiring. It was probably so you can inspire other people as well, you know, and this is amazing.
I really love your message about we are not our experiences. We're not what happens to us, because I think that we carry around a lot of guilt and shame of what happens in life, and we don't know how to let go and forgive ourselves and like just really show ourselves compassion, because we seek it from other people and we're not going to get that. You know, we have to nurture ourselves, because at the end of the day, you know, that's all we got.
Yeah,
you're right.
Yeah. Awesome.
I mean, I still struggle with it. Don't think I'm home free.
Of course. It's every day. Every day. Every day. I mean, people say like happiness is not a destination, right? We have to fight for this every day.
You're right. And the reality is I finally got real about, you know, I'm not my story. I'm not just a victim. No, I'm actually, you know, a victim of childhood sexual abuse, and I'm a survivor and a thriver.
Exactly.
I love the word thriver.
And you use it to empower you.
Yeah. And hopefully to empower others, because the reality is so many of us can't tell our truths. Mm-hmm. But the minute we do tell our truths, we give other people permission to do the same and realize there's so much freedom on the other side of that.
Right.
We don't have to hang out in secrets or hang out in suffering.
Well, that vulnerability, you know, really just leads you to other places. And by having, you know, like your story come out, like you said, it really gives other people the confidence that they should come out and tell their story, because you have no idea how many, you may not know that your story has saved someone else, or at least, you know, started someone else's journey to recovery and, you know, finding their truth. And that's really cool. These are tough things to talk about. So the
feedback I'm getting too is like, this book isn't just for people who are trans or know trans people, or people who've survived, you know, major traumas at the hands of their family with regard to sexual abuse, or for people in recovery. It's for humans.
Right.
Like, everyone's like, this is a human book. And I love that people are telling me that, because I do believe
100%.
That we're spiritual beings having a human experience.
Yes.
And that we're not our stories. We're not our stories. And we each have a unique set of challenges.
Right.
And we need to look at it as that. You know, every day I have to deal with certain things. Yes, I'm transgender. Yes, I'm preoperative. Yes, I'm in recovery from multiple addictions. Yes, I have major PTSD. Yes, I have what they call treatment-resistant severe depression. Yes, I'm bipolar. It's a long list. Do I want to like let that list define me and tell me it's not safe to go out in the world? And there are days where I do have agoraphobia and the list kind of wins. Or I'm just like, you know, I'm not strong enough today to deal with all of this out in the world. So stay home today, do self-care, nurture yourself, get strong again so tomorrow you can go out.
Yeah.
I mean, that's literally still an issue for me. Sometimes I deal with agoraphobia, but I can be real about it. I don't have to be shame-based and hide, you know?
Right.
And that's the thing. We each have our own unique lists, but we are not our list.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Those are just the things that mold us, guide us, shape us.
They're just labels. I hate the labels.
Right, true.
Yeah. Quinn Alexander Fontaine, the book is hung like a like a seahorse. Not like a horse.
Oh my God. That's what I am.
Right. I think that's the play on words here. I finally figured it out. Okay. Hung like a seahorse. Sounds like an interesting book. Now, I'm sure we have some listeners, you know, because, you know, let's say that on being gay, there's a lot of controversy. Some people are saying you're born with it. Some people are saying it's the way you were raised. But in your case, what do you feel? Do you feel that this was a biological thing? Or if people tell you, well, maybe your experiences made you want to change your body or something like that. How do you view this? It's really interesting.
Are you asking, you know, based on the abuse? If that were the case, then 1 in 6 boys and one in 3 girls would be either LGBT, they'd be on that spectrum. I don't think that has anything to do with it.
Right.
I think that has some things to do with intimacy issues, attachment issues, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, why on earth would anyone choose this difficult road? I mean, I would pray. I'd be like, please let me wake up in the right body so I can live my life.
Right. And be, you know, be so-called normal. So people don't look at you like, you know, like, who are you? You know, so I totally agree. You know, when people talk about gay people and that, I say, why would anybody want to choose to have such a difficult life? You know, and obviously it points to the fact that you're born that way. This is your drive. That's what moves you, and obviously you're feeling a lot more free now, right, to express who you are.
Yeah, every day, more and more, of course. Yeah. Like, since I started testosterone, I've been more in alignment with mind and body than ever in my life.
Well, I will say, on your book cover, you are very handsome.
Thank you. You're very sweet. But back to the whole choice question, right. You guys, the only choice involved is choosing to live out your truth, or choosing to be in denial of what is your truth, no matter what it is.
So it's how you view what happens to you, right?
I'll say again.
I say it's pretty much how you view what is happening to you, how you perceive it.
Well, I think it's like he said, you know,
that
like
you
it's
control over.
But to look at it like what's happening to you is almost like a victim mentality, because life it's what's happening. You know, we are having this experience, like he said, it's an experience, it's a journey, you know. So you just got to roll with it, you know.
Right.
Yeah. And you got to turn it around and find the gifts in it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Everything that's happened to me has led me to my gifts and talents, you know, which is really ultimately uplifting other people through truth telling and humor. I mean, that's my life mission. Yeah. That's what I want to do. That's what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I love it.
And
Quinn, there's so much to talk about. I mean, you have a very fascinating message and a true to life story that's very touching. What I wanted to ask is, as far as relationship, intimacy and stuff, have you been able to find a mate or mates during your life where they actually helped you deal with this, with your trauma?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've been very fortunate in that way. My longest relationship was 8.5 years, but we decided we had outgrown each other romantically.
Yeah,
we're still close, you know. But in the 3 years of transitioning, I've dated 3 different women, and that was all fun and wonderful. But I right now I'm single by choice, and my message to the universe is I'm not messing around. I'm not effing around career and around future wife. So I don't want to just date somebody just to be dating somebody. I'm really waiting for the right woman.
Yeah. That's awesome, man. That's awesome. Quinn Alexander Fontaine, the book is Hung Like a Seahorse, a real-life transgender adventure of tragedy, comedy, and recovery. So you do comedy as well. You're multi-talented. I see you went to California College of Arts, and, you know, so you're pretty educated, I would say very well adjusted, considering all you've been through, you know. So
thank you. I don't always feel that way, but thank
you.
Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, today's a good day, and being with you guys is wonderful.
Awesome. Aww. Quinn, how can people find you? How can they find the book?
You can find me on Facebook, Quinn Alexander Fontaine. Message me there if you want to talk. I'm good about getting back to everybody. I'm a communicator. I think that's important. The book is available on Amazon.com and at every independent bookstore. You just got to ask for it, and they will get it for you.
Sounds good.
And I'm hoping to do a book tour in the next, probably by spring.
That'll be awesome, man. You'll be able to get around and spread your message and stuff. And we thank you, Quinn, for joining us, sharing your story. And, you know, I, for one, am very touched, and I wish you, first of all, maybe less challenges in the rest of your life, but you never know. You seem to have come here for quite a journey, you know. So if you're spiritual at all, you'd know what I'm saying, you know. But
Yeah.
Well, Quinn Alexander Fontaine, thank you again for joining us. All the best to you, and much continued success. And I'm sure you got a lot more books in you. So there you go.
We'll see. But thank you so much, you guys. Big love to you both, and
hope to
see you, meet you in person someday.
Yeah,
soon.
For sure.
Yes, when you're in LA, you have an open invitation.
Quinn, do you do stand up comedy?
I do a little bit. Yeah, I'm just getting back to it. I hadn't done it for years because it was hard to do when you're not in the right body.
100%.
But now that I'm in the right body.
Oh, yeah, you would be. I'm a comic. I do comedy out here in LA. So if you come to LA, hit me up. We can hit a show together.
Yeah.
So. And what's your full name?
Rachel Wolfson.
Cool.
Yeah.
I'll check you out.
I'm at Wolfie so Comedy much. On social media. Yeah. We'll follow each other.
Okay. Very cool.
Okay, Gwen. Thank you so much and have a wonderful day.
You too. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Thank you.
Of course. Nice guy.
Yeah, very nice. That's, you know?
It's just, it's crazy because we walk by people, we sit in traffic, you know, we're in a big city and we don't realize that everyone goes through trauma, you know, everyone has their traumas,
right,
and their histories and their stories. And, you know, if you don't talk about it, you would never know that someone has gone through something so terrible. I mean, I can't think of, you know, that's one of the worst things I think that a kid can go through,
yeah,
you know, is, yeah. So it's a tough topic and people honestly don't like talking about it. And I understand why, because it's just so difficult to fathom someone who brings a child into the world,
know?
And
yeah.
You're their guardian and their caregiver and that's their first experiences with humans. I mean, I really feel for people like that. And it's just really cool that he is, you know, turning his trauma into
through it.
You know,
yeah,
so I really feel for people like that.
I know. Well, so we thank Quinn for sharing the story, and also it lets you see, I think, talking to transgender, that they're not monsters. They're not.
No, not at all.
Us.
I mean, I don't.
They're great people.
No,
you know,
I don't even like being like they're not, because it's just people are not their labels. He's a human being. You know, I think the hardest thing in the world, it's just such a hard world, and to try and find your place, and you know, when in a world that just is so critical and judgmental and just doesn't, you know, you have to fit into a certain box to do certain things, and it's like no one gives a shit at the end of the day, you know what I mean? Like just the hardest thing is to love yourself. I really think, you know, people can do anything. You can find people who will do some of the most incredible things, but they don't love themselves. That's what they find the hardest thing to do.
Right. So they get in their own way.
Right. Exactly. And like people don't realize, like, you got to start with that, you know? And that's the thing is it's not a destination. Loving yourself, it's a everyday task.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's just, I mean, who, like, I think, I know it's such a stupid example, but like when Bruce Jenner transitioned and became Caitlyn Jenner, and I think like Kanye West said something really beautiful, despite, you know, of all people, Kanye, but he really just, the way he worded it and the way he explained it is like, how awful would it be to just not be able to be yourself,
right.
You know, to just not feel comfortable enough that you can just be what you are and whoever you are.
I know. And many people go through that even when it's not a sexual.
Some people will go. Exactly. Thing, it know? Doesn't even mean to be a sex. It could be a career thing. It could be, you know, it could be anything, whatever you're interested in. But because of outside, you know, influences or whatever, even if it's your family, your friends, your girlfriend, whatever it is,
right.
You know, so it's a tough world, man.
Yeah, it sure is. Let's see. I guess we were talking about the storm, and I guess this pro surfer died at the age of 16 going to surf the waves created by Irma. So I'm asking you, you know, what the hell is this, you know? So he explained that they wanted to take advantage of those big waves, you know?
Yeah.
So they went to Barbados.
That's nuts.
And,
that's dumb. I don't know why people do that. I get it. You're a fucking professional surfer, but don't surf in a storm.
Right. Then they believe he got thrown into the rocky area, you know, shallow.
Because you're not a predictor of the ocean. Like, a wave is going to come. You don't know where it's going to put. I mean, I just.
And these are huge waves. Why would you want to go outside and be in a storm, you know? Just like those storm chasers, you know? Like, what the hell are you
doing?
They're
just, like, trying to prove how big their dicks are. It's
probably,
like, we get it, dude. Like, buy a Maserati. Don't go surfing in a storm.
Yeah, he's 16, though. Maybe he had some issues.
Sorry. I don't know.
Yeah.
Just, why are you doing that?
For the Michael Jackson fans, there's a new album coming out.
Damn, he's still putting out albums from the grave?
Right. Well, that's the thing, is that it's not new songs. It's a collection of his favorite dance songs, I guess. So a collection of his 13 of his all-time most electrifying and danceable tracks. And they include Ghost, Torture, Thriller, and Dirty Diana. So you see, it's all like songs he's sung before, but it's going to be released just around Halloween, which they said was Michael's favorite holiday, favorite time of the year. The album is going to be called Scream. And yeah, I don't see the point in getting it, though, if you already have albums with the same songs on there, but, you know. So, but do you have a favorite song by Michael Jackson?
Probably Man in the Mirror or Free Willy song.
Oh.
Yeah.
Very interesting. What's the Free Willy song? What's the name of it? Is that the name of it?
Just type in the Free Willy. I forget what it's called. You should play it right now.
Oh, okay.
Can you please play it?
Can I please play it? Okay. Yeah. Let me find
it. I really think we need to, like, have some, it's not Thursday, but, like, we should play some old, just, like, just play like one song.
Why does it have to be Thursday?
I know. Michael Jackson Wednesdays.
Yeah, right?
You don't know the you don't know the Free Willy? You'll know it when you hear it. You'll start to hear it and then you'll just want to.
Oh, I probably do, but yeah, I don't know. It's called what the it's Free called. Willy song.
No, it's
Will
it's
You Be There?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
That's okay, the, Will the You Be one. There? Okay.
So good. I'm going to listen to this on the way home and cry.
Really?
Probably.
Why?
No, I'm just kidding. It's just like such a great song.
Yeah, okay, definitely not this song.
Not this. This song's amazing.
Yeah.
Hold me like the River Jordan, and I will then say to thee, you are my friend.
Someone should be filming this.
Yeah, the video is obviously of the orca whale.
Love me like a mother.
This is the best song ever.
Will you be there?
Man, I miss Michael Jackson. I definitely cried when he died.
Isn't he like
I cried.
Cool, man?
Oh, he was the best.
I know. He's really cool.
Genius.
And I, like, I know.
Fucking genius. I don't give a fuck what anyone says about Michael Jackson. I love him.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. You know I just, you know what? That's one
nobody's
mystery I'm cool with never knowing.
Yeah, nobody's performed music like
I
he has.
See, here's the thing. On the topic of child sexual abuse, there's just so much speculation about abuse that Michael Jackson went through.
Right.
You know, as
know.
A kid. And it just,
yeah.
I don't know. It, it just
yeah,
more struggles
knows?
With his identity and everything.
Yeah. I know. Well,
is this
what
your
you
favorite Michael Jackson
this is
song?
My favorite because it's got the best beat. This and Thriller, I like. It's actually you're right. It's hard to pick a favorite.
They're
song
all
of
great,
Michael Jackson, right?
Yeah, they're all amazing. I mean, Michael Jackson, Prince. I just feel grateful I was alive when they were alive.
Right?
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know,
it sure does. You know,
and David Bowie. I mean.
David
man,
Bowie.
We lost some greats last in the last couple of years.
We really have, you know. You know, I never understood people wanting to just spin records on the radio, but it feels good, right? I mean, you turn it up.
Yeah,
and,
too.
Yeah, I know.
I remember seeing the music video as a kid, and like my dad was like, "So cool," and he's like, "That's not," and I was like, "Cool, well, I'm that guy." Because he had long hair, and I was like, "He's so pretty."
That's funny.
He sings so cool. She sings and dances so well. Nope, that's a guy. I'm like, whatever. I like it. I want more of it.
Oh, well. All right, well, folks, this is it for today. We thank Quinn Alexander Fontaine for calling in, giving us an inspiring story. And tomorrow, I think we have a studio guest. I'm not sure, but
yeah, we
way.
Do. We have our friend from The Sugar Show.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's tomorrow.
Can't wait to talk
you
to
see,
her.
You know better than I do, but
then,
my calendar.
And then we have The Bud. We got a new episode
yes.
live of The Bud
So you
tomorrow.
Have Thursday to look forward to, folks.
Yep, we got
nothing
our
wrong with
we
that.
Got a funny comedian coming on who's also a stoner and does a lot of work in the comedy stoner industry. So
sounds good. Can't wait for that one.
Yeah.
All right, folks. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you all tomorrow.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Rachel, exclusively on LA Talk Radio.